Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're north of Carlisle, not far from the Scottish borders, in a remote part of Cumbria, surrounded by green fields and sheep, and we're hoping for a very special experience because we're heading to Stone's Barn, which is home to Maddie Pryor and her daughter Rosellen Kemp, and they run these singing weekends here to pass on the folk tradition. And we're especially lucky this time because one of the guest tutors on the course is none other than the great Martin Carthy, and we're hoping to eavesdrop on one of his sessions. So what more could you ask for? Maddie Pryor, who's sung with Steel Eye Span since 1970, that's for 52 years. We're going to see her daughter, who is a brilliant singing coach, and the great Martin Carthy in full flow. What a bumper edition of Folk on Foot this is going to be. Maddie and Rosellen, it's wonderful to see you and thank you for welcoming us here at Stone's Barn.
Very welcome to be here. It's been fantastically sunny until today.
There was a bit of a drizzle going on, but we're out here in the yard.
It is known for rain.
Yeah. So tell us about what you've got here. How many buildings have you got?
Well, there's a house and I live in it. We have a little cottage over there and this is the barn that we do our courses in.
I can hear some singing going on in there. So yeah, what sort of things happen on these singing weekends?
Well, we do a lot of singing, usually, and I've sent them the task of listening to traditional singers and songs and then making them their own. So I've asked them to try and sing like the originals, which is really, really hard, and then do their own adaptation of it.
Well, you've got a guest star today, haven't you, in Martin Carthy.
In Martin, yes,
you and him go back a bit.
We do. We go back a very long way.
Do you remember when you first met him?
Well, he'd be the mid-60s. Be the mid-60s when we first were aware of him. But we became quite good friends quite early on when Tim and I were travelling. We'd stay at his house quite a lot. So
you've asked him to come and do a bit of... Yes. Tutoring here.
Yeah, so we're sort of sharing our view of traditional music and traditional singers and where we got some of our songs and what we've done with them and how we've changed them, particularly in my case, changed them quite a lot, and put backbeat and a full band onto songs that are a cappella and quite delicate, but not when we've done them, you know. But the thing is, the songs are really strong and you can do anything with them. They still work. You know, that's the power of a traditional song. It's not... They're very robust as songs to sing. They are really... the good ones.
Hey, boy, little Sally Racket.
Haul her away.
She pawned her best jacket.
Haul her away.
And she never did regret it.
Haul her away.
With a holy high.
Haul her away.
Little Betty Baker.
Haul her away.
She ran off with a Quaker.
Haul her away.
Yes, her mum could shake her.
Haul her away.
With a holy high.
Haul her away.
Little Betty Skinner.
Haul her away.
She says she's a beginner.
Haul her away.
With a holy high.
Haul her away.
Little Dolly Docket.
Haul her away.
She washes in a bucket.
Haul her away.
She's a tart but doesn't look it.
Haul her away.
With a holy high.
Haul her away.
Up your fighting cocks, boys.
Haul her away.
Up and split her blocks, boys.
Haul her away.
Let's go and laugh, boys.
Haul her away.
And that'll be enough, boys.
Haul her away.
And Rosalind, do you teach singing technique as well? Do you help people to improve their vocal abilities?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So to reach their vocal abilities, I suppose, yeah. So the anatomy and physiology of the voice is very important to me as a singer, and it helps me enormously. And so I'm trying to pass that on, that the voice isn't just something you're born with and you wake up with every day. It's actually something that's very mechanical and you have to work very hard at it, but also how tied to the emotions it is, whether we like it or not. That's the kind of thing that really interests me, and to see the difference between a singer at the beginning of the weekend and at the end of the weekend is really just worth living for. It's incredibly gratifying, and people start bands, they start choirs, they start all sorts of things, and they sing traditional music when they leave here, and that's kind of why we do it as well.
And it's a great setting here, isn't it? Because it is. You're really miles away from civilization in a really bucolic and beautiful part of the world.
Yes, it is. It is remote here, and it's it's inconvenient sometimes, but I do like the remoteness of this, and also the strength of community around about. You know, I know most of the farmers, and I know most, and they know me. You know, and they sort of, you know.
How long have you been here, Maddie?
Well, nearly 40 years.
Right. And what brought you to this spot in the first place?
Rick.
Well, your ex-husband.
Yeah. We wanted to move out of North London, out of Crouch End. Things you do.
Bit of a contrast.
Yeah, well, because we travelled so much, you just kind of take whatever's there, you just deal with it. And I was surprised that, because I'd known people in move into Cornwall, where it had been, nobody kind of like got to know them at all. Whereas up here, we're very friendly with our neighbour up the road, and he introduced us to everybody. We all went down the local pub, and it was fantastic. The first 5 years we were here was like being on another planet. It was absolutely brilliant. They thought we were odd because we were musicians.
Well, they still think we're odd.
And they
might be right.
Yes. Like Rose was born here, of course.
Yeah. So you've been here all your life?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so what's it like in the winter?
It's cold. Well, actually, it's not as bad as it was. It's warmer than it used to be.
We had wonderful snow drifts in the olden days.
Yeah, we did. We did. We got snowed in and stuff. But it's never enough snow to snow in now.
No.
You know, it's kind of quite rare to get any snow. And if you do get any snow, it's gone by the time you get to Bolton Fell. So it's very different. And
do you think
ways.
It's changed you living here? Do you think you've become a different character because of the landscape that you live in and the area that you live in?
Oh, well, one of the things, I've realised how powerful nature is. You know, when you live in a town, which I had done entirely up until I came here, you don't realise how powerful it is, how in the spring it erupts out of the ground and things grow really quickly. And I was kind of quite taken aback by that because I really didn't know. The snow is a-lying upon Bewcastle Fells, and the wind strips the skin from my face. The bare bones of a tree give some shelter to me. Our bit is a drafty old place. Oh yes, it's a very old place.
And you must be more connected to the seasons here than you ever would have been in Crouch End.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And also, you know what time of year it is by the darkness, because we have real dark skies here. When the sun goes down, it is really dark. And whereas in town, it's never really dark.
And so what is the climax of a singing weekend here? What happens at the end?
Well, we usually have the Saturday night is our candlelit dinner. And everybody, it's not absolutely essential, but generally people sing their songs on Saturday night. We actually sing pretty much every night, but Saturday night is the big night. And it's just try and make sure that everybody actually has a go.
Do you think if we go inside, we could eavesdrop on the next session?
Well, I think it's going now.
OK, let's go in.
This song actually represents a moment in my life. I was, 17, 18 years old? 17, I think. And I didn't know who Sam Larder was, and I went along for the evening, and I was completely blown away. It was just a revelation to me. I'd never heard English traditional song. And I thought I knew some of the songs that he announced, but they were always entirely different, wildly different. This is 1958, and the kind of stuff you heard on the radio was, there was some nice stuff played, but the people's songs were stuff like "How much is that doggy in the window?" and "I'm a pink toothbrush, you're a blue toothbrush. Will you marry me one day?" You know, and this 80-year-old man came up with this tune, and I'm thinking, what kind of a bloody tune is that? You know, never heard anything like it, and he never left my thoughts. You know, and that was the reason when I decided, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to find out about that, because it was the start of a huge adventure which still goes on. I mean, that's the nature of this beast. You keep fighting this, but the more you find out, the more there is to find out, isn't it? And it's so eternally interesting and fascinating. As we were gone sailing, five cold frosty nights, five cold frosty nights and 4 days, before we did spy a lofty tall ship, she come bearing down on us, great boys. Oh, where are you going, you lofty tall ship? What makes you to venture so nigh? For I am Ted Robin all on the salt sea, to maintain my two brothers and I. Then heave up your courses and let go your main sheets, and bring yourself under my lee, and I will take from you your rich merchant's
goods, merchants' goods. And I'll point your bow guns to the sea. Oh, I'll not heave up my courses, nor let go of my mainsheets, nor bring myself under your lee. Nor you won't take from me my rich merchant's goods, merchant's goods. Nor you'll point my bow guns to the sea. Then broadside and broadside these vessels they went. They were fighting 4 hours or more, till Henry Martin gave to her a broadside, and she sank and she never arose more. Sad news I have to tell you, sad news is come down. Sad news, it is going around. Of a lofty tall ship, and she's cast away. And the most of her merry men.
Maddie, there's a wonderful vista here, and we're standing outside a church. Where have you brought us to?
This is Bewcastle. This is the church, Bewcastle Church. Used to be the pub just over there, which would make sense, but it's now gone, as so many of the pubs around here have, because it's very remote here. And this is the least populated area of the least populated county in England.
Right, and there's a lot of sheep.
Yes,
and there's a lot of green undulating hills here, which are quite beautiful, aren't they? And is this a historic church?
Yes, well, the main thing about it is that it's got a cross. When they say a cross, it hasn't actually got a cross on it. There's various reports and things. They call it the cross, and they are in debate as to whether it ever had a cross on it, and certainly it's been gone for a long time.
But so it looks like the top's been locked off.
It does,
it?
Yeah. But they're not sure that it actually did have a cross on it now.
Let's go in through this gate.
But it would have been painted. It would have been colourful. And but it's the 6th century.
The 6th century.
Yeah. Very early. So half of it is Celtic and half of it is Anglo-Saxon. It's kind of between the two. I think it's to do with Cuthbert, because this is Cuthbert's church, and his body was carried, and I think this is one of the stopping points. It's very special. This side is kind of like it's got runes on it and people, and the other sides, the opposite, these sides are all patterns, Celtic knots and things, there's sundials on the other side, I think. But then, and this is the Tree of Life.
Wow.
Up there. Yeah, it's quite big, isn't it? Yeah. And it's never moved from here. It has been here right through the centuries.
That's an extraordinary.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Look at, isn't
Every
it?
So often they murmur about moving it, and we all go, no, it's been there. That's where it should be.
Yes.
So that's
Do you think we could go inside the church?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's always open. Yeah.
1792, it says, over this archway, but obviously there must have been a church.
Well, this is an old Roman fort. And an old, what's name fought before that, a hill fort.
So this is St Cuthbert's Church in Bewcastle.
It is, and the lovely windows were engineered by my friend. I think she was the secretary of the PCC. Yeah. And they are lovely, I have to say.
Beautiful stained glass windows, yeah. Which is presumably an image of St Cuthbert above the altar.
They're all off the cross.
Ah, right.
They're all images off the cross.
Right. Mm. It's a very plain church, isn't it?
It is.
Very, you know, whitewashed walls,
yeah.
and plain wooden pews.
And I think it's always been fairly, not Puritan, but fairly basic round here. And it was reputed there was a cross up on that high bar, and apparently one of the rectors got up there with a saw and sawed it off.
A bit too fancy for him.
Too fancy.
I can imagine.
I was an oak tree. It took 1,000 years to grow. And I've seen kingdoms come and go. I've seen the losers turn to lords and back again. I held the rebels when they hung them from my limbs. When men of fortune cast their futures on the sea, that's when they came for me. And I was a slave ship under the standard of the cross. A hallelujah holocaust. And half were dead before we reached the other shore. And the captain never saw the coming storm that swept around the Cape and took us by surprise. And only 8 survived. And I was a campfire, a pile of driftwood in the sand. The only comfort in this land. 8 hungry sailors roasted acorns that they found and left me burning as they stumbled toward the sound of a church bell ringing out above the ocean's wind. And I was born again. And I am an oak tree out along the wild Cape Fear, and there is talk of freedom here. Where is the kingdom that was here before I came? Where have the people gone who only left their names? A revolution's just a circle after all, and every king falls. And I am an oak tree. If it takes 1,000 years to grow, I'll see kingdoms come and go.
That was absolutely wonderful, wonderful. All right. Tell us a bit about the song.
Ah, it was written by Jonathan Bird, an American. And it's sort of like an emigration song, really, isn't it? Yeah. In a kind of weird way, yeah. And I just loved it when I heard it, and so we've just sang it. And Rose Ellen's joined me on it, which was lovely.
Which was fantastic. When did you first start singing with your mum, Rose Ellen?
Oh boy, when I was born.
In the womb, I should think.
Yeah.
I mean, because you must have been singing a lot when you were pregnant, weren't you?
Still touring.
You were touring on the road.
Yes.
When you were expecting her.
Yes.
So you started as a little girl. What are your first memories of singing with your mum?
It was just all the time.
There was always.
I dragged her out a lot.
Did you take her on tour with you?
Yeah, you came on tour a few times, didn't you? Yeah, hello, there's the birds in. Swallows.
No, it's interesting, we were with Martin Carthy earlier on, because right. We talked to Eliza, of course, about being on tour with him and going up on the stage and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Did you have any of those experiences?
Well, you came
I'm not a performer, I am a teacher, and if anyone had said one good word about teaching, I would have known that much sooner. but I started teaching here at Stones Barn 15 years ago, and I've never looked back. And I tried to, you know, carrying on touring, but the joy just isn't the same. The pleasure isn't the same. The sense of achievement and learning and really being with people isn't the same when you're just when you're a performer and everybody else in front of you is passive. I'm much more a sing together kind of person.
You like to engage with people. Yeah.
And Rose is a brilliant voice coach and teacher. She's really good at it.
Yeah. Vocal technique's my thing. So. Yeah.
But there's something wonderful about listening to those blood harmonies, you know, to listening to relatives singing together has a different spirit, doesn't it?
It does. And you always see it with other people, so I assume it's with us, although I'm just not aware of it particularly. But
I think it's to do with practice. I've heard some wonderful harmony groups that have just practiced a lot. And experience things together, and in a way, that's the same as family.
I think June Tabor and I kind of like fell together because we got the same background of music within the folk world, and we phrased the same, strangely enough, being very different singers. When we came together, we knew exactly what the other one was.
As the Silly Sisters. Yeah. Yeah, and that was a great melding of two voices, wasn't it?
Yes,
and
it was.
Did you have any arguments about the repertoire, or did you just immediately fall into a set of songs that you both loved?
No, it was quite difficult to find a repertoire that we both worked. Well, it wasn't so hard in the first album. Second album was more difficult because we'd gone in very disparate directions at that time. But it still worked. It was interesting to come together and do something different.
Have you got another song for us that you might do now?
We could do... should we do Blessed Quietness? Would you do that?
Yeah, we could do that.
Joys are flowing like a river, since the Comforter has come. He abides with us forever, makes the trusting heart his home. Blessed quietness, holy quietness, what assurance in my soul. On the stormy sea, speaking peace to me, how the billows cease to roam. Such a wonderful salvation, where we always see his face. Such a peaceful habitation, such a quiet resting place. Blessed quietness, holy quietness, what assurance in my soul. On the stormy sea, speaking peace to me, how the billows cease to roam. Like the falling rain from heaven, like the sunlight from the sky, so the Holy Ghost is given, falling on us from on high. Blessed quietness, holy quietness, what assurance in my soul. On the stormy sea, speaking peace to me, how the billows cease to roll.
Absolutely gorgeous. So gorgeous.
Thank you.
And would you say a word about that song? Because it seems so appropriate to you. Well, holy quietness.
Perfect.
And also the rain falling from heaven, which is doing a bit outside, isn't it?
And it's interesting that the English folk world took on American spiritual songs, particularly Sacred Harp. I'm not sure where that's from, but it's in that sort of area. And for some reason, you know, all that Sacred Harp material and Southern Harmony was just part of our repertoire. And so that's come into it.
It's so great to hear your voice sounding so beautiful. And I wonder if it's changed over the years. I wonder if you felt that it's matured and like a red wine or something like that. It's, you know, it's come into its own at different times.
It's got some gravel in the bottom.
Has it changed?
Yes, it's come down. I don't sing up in those areas I used to. Why would I want to, really? At 20, you sing one way. You have one voice. And at 70-odd, you have a different voice, hopefully. You know, it's sing with the voice you have today, I think, is the rhyme that makes sense of what we do with our voices. Because they change from day to day as well. It's not every day isn't the same. It changes.
How did you start singing? I mean, did you start as a child? Were you in a musical family?
No, not a musical family at all. But I did go to the matinee, Saturday matinee, the cinema. But before it, they would have a competition. You could do anything, but mainly people sang. And I used to sing, "I'm a bow-legged chicken, I'm a knock-kneed hen," the Tennessee Wig Walk, as it was.
How does that go?
I'm a bow-legged chicken, I'm a knock-kneed hen, never been so happy since I don't know when. Walk with a wiggle and a wiggle with a walk, doing the Tennessee Wig Walk. And there's more to it, but I won't go.
That's fantastic.
But I used to sing that and with the actions, and I used to win. So that was...
Is that when you got the performing bug?
Well, it was when I knew I could sing. And I think we have a lot of people that come who say, who've been told they can't sing. Quite often when they were nine, and we're years and years later. But that stays with you. But I was told I could sing, so I sang.
And what about folk music? When did that first swim into your consciousness?
Well, I was driving an American couple around, Sandy and Jeannie Darlington, and they said, "You've got to stop singing that American stuff. You are totally rubbish at it." Because they were Americans, and they could hear that an English person singing American is not very convincing. So they gave me a load of tapes, because they were American, very organised, and they had all these tapes. And they played, and I just had to sit with these cassettes.
Of what?
Of old English singers. All that stuff that we've got.
Right, there. So we were talking about Sam Lana earlier on, the working class singers, but he was a seaman, and Harry Cox.
Yes, yeah. A lot of travellers, Mary Doran, I really liked. Phoebe Smith was, you know, there were various ones that I was attracted to.
And why do you think it made an impact on you, at that particular kind of music? Why do you think it went deep into your psyche?
Because I sat with it for a long time so that I got it. And I think that's the thing with music. If you want to learn about it, you have to sort of swamp yourself in it. And then you start to understand the vocabulary. I mean, I don't know anything about jazz, but if I was on a desert island and all I had was jazz for a month, I would get it. Yeah. Because that's how music works. You kind of have to learn to find that music that you love.
And so what about your first steps into performing folk music? Were you in the folk clubs?
Yes. I went round the folk clubs with a banjo. And I did a week in a Wimpy Bar. It's the only other work I've ever done. And
as a waiter?
In 64, something like that. 1964. And I got £10.
That isn't the case for young musicians.
No.
We have not done one service job.
Multiple.
Well, that's right. I got away with it. Everybody that I say that to now, they will go, "What? 1 week? Is that all you've ever done? Proper work?" And then I did a week in a Wimpy Bar for £10 and a gig on my own with a banjo for £8. And I thought, well, I'll do this for a bit. And that was a nice decision.
Pays better.
Yeah, it pays better.
And did you start meeting other performers, like, you know, Martin Carthy and people like that? Did you come into contact with them at that stage?
Once Tim and I were travelling together, because I did a year on my own.
Tim Hart and I.
Yeah. Once we joined together, we just went around folk clubs all the time. That's what we did. And went up to Cecil Sharp House and got songs from there and all that sort of thing. And I had these tapes from Sandy and Jeannie.
And so you and Tim were in at the start of Steel Eye Span.
Yes.
Together, weren't you?
Yes.
It was two couples.
Yeah, and a referee.
was that Ashley Hutchings?
Yes.
So who were the other couple?
Gay and Terry Woods. And and they just came to... They were at dinner at our house one night, and they said, "Do you want to join a band?" So we said, yeah. Well, we said we'd have a rehearsal the next day, and then we said, yes, that seems to work. And then we spent 3 months in the country, which probably wasn't a good idea.
So you went into the country to rehearse, did you?
Yes, you know, that's what you did.
Did you just take a house somewhere?
Yeah, well, a friend of ours had a house in Wiltshire, and we went and stayed in... what was the name? Winterbourne Stoke, down in off the A30 or 303, one of those.
And was it a musical marriage made in heaven?
No. turned out not. We made the album, and we sort of got on reasonably well, but obviously not well enough.
So then you split up after the first album?
Yes. And then Martin came in, so...
Martin Carthy?
Yeah.
Joined in, right. And did that make a big difference, to the sound?
Yeah, well, it made a difference to the sound, because there was only one female voice, where it had been two in the first album. Yes, it was sort of different. And then Mark, we did two albums with Martin, and Peter had joined by then. And then
Peter Knight.
Yeah, Peter Knight. And then then it changed completely, and Bob Johnson and Rick Kemp came in, and then it became a much rockier kind of idea altogether.
Did you have any... Well, I mean, there were those purists who thought the idea of electric instruments with folk music was terrible. I remember in the 70s being in a folk band in Sheffield with a fiddle player and an acoustic guitarist and an electric bass player. And the electric bass player didn't get allowed into some folk clubs because he was not playing a proper purist instrument like the acoustic guitar.
Like an acoustic guitar. Yeah. No. I mean, the logic of it all.
It's mad, isn't it? You know. But was there any doubt in anybody's mind when you started to get more... electric about doing it that way?
I think there probably was, but we probably wouldn't hear much of it because we kind of were starting to move in a different world, in a sense, because we didn't play... Still, I couldn't play folk clubs. So we were playing in different places, so our contact with the folk world kind of slightly thinned. Tim and I would go around the folk clubs, but mostly it was... I mean, most people actually quite enjoyed it. I mean, the strange thing was that the loudest thing on stage when Martin was in the band was Martin's guitar. And we had dual Showman amps and 400 watts of WEM PA. I mean, I'm surprised they even knew I was singing. But, you know, but it was... take your head off. The frequencies must have been appalling.
I don't know why we're talking about this in the past tense, because Steel Eye Span is still going, isn't it?
And really brilliant at the moment as well, because everybody...
And better than ever.
Better than ever, because everybody actually wants to be there, which is...
That wasn't always the case, was it?
It's not always the case, no.
I think of it almost like a sort of slightly dysfunctional family. Is that the way you thought about it? You
know, it is pretty
various
much.
Various people fell in and out, the uncles fell out with cousins and...
Yeah,
you know.
It's that sort of thing. I mean, I used to say... And also, people quite often came back again, left. Martin was in twice. I used to say it's like a bus, people get on and off, you know.
Some people go off in a huff and then decide they weren't that upset after all, and they come back and have another go.
Well, we finished the band towards the end of the 70s, and you realise that what you do in one band, you never do anywhere else, and I don't care what the band is, it's never the same. And in a funny sort of way, it doesn't matter who's in the band either, but the band itself has a sort of way of working. And you only do what you can do in that band. When you do solo stuff, you do something completely different. You know, every solo performer that's come out of a band has always thought, right, I'll have a much better band. But it's different. It's different.
And is it about the material? You know, is there a core of material that is always going to be Steel Eye Span?
Partly. But it's also just an attitude, just a way of being and doing stuff. And everybody that comes in kind of picks that up.
Maddie, we've come outside again now, and we're in the graveyard just in front of the Bucastle Cross. What are you going to sing for us?
Well, I'll sing a piece that I wrote with Rick, my ex-husband, as it were, Rick Kemp. We wrote it when we'd been here a couple of years, which is like about 35 years ago now. So some of the references are kind of out of date now, talking about not wanting silage, because everybody does silage now, but there was no big bales back then. In fact, my friend who lived over in the Domain farm, it was very largely written for them and other farmers like them, as it were.
So it's a song very much of this place.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Wonderful.
The snow is a-lying upon Bucastle Fells, and the wind strips the skin from my face. The bare bones of a tree give some shelter to me.
Our bit is a draughty old place. Oh yes, it's a draughty old place. The land's like a bog, with rain upon rain, wet upon wet upon wet. 9 months of winter and 3 months bad weather, and never a dry day yet. No, never a drying day yet. There's always the beasts waiting for a feed, and it's just the same with the men. With the kids home today, and the hens are off lay, and I'll never get all this work done. No, I'll never get all my work done. But the snow is a-lying upon Bewcastle Fells, and the wind is chasing the sun. The forestry shroud of a lowering cloud tells that there's more rain to come. There's always some more rain to come. But the snowdrops are gone, there'll be primroses soon, and lambing time's well on its way. Lord bless us and hear no silage this year. Give us a hot month for making the hay. Make it hot for the making of hay. But the snow is a-lying upon Bewcastle Fells, and the wind strips the skin from my face. The bare bones of a tree give some shelter to me. Our bit is a draughty old place. Oh yes, it's a very old place.
Amazing to hear you sing that. with swifts,
yes,
circling above you, yes, and then darting into the swallows. Yeah. Going into the eaves of the house opposite,
yeah,
and
yeah,
right in front of the ancient Bewcastle cross,
yes,
and with the rain just dripping down on us as you sang it.
Yes, wrong time of year, but it does the job.
Maddie, it's been amazing to talk to you and to hear your songs and to see this extraordinary place. Thank you so much for joining us on Folk on Foot.
No problem.
Maddie Pryor and Rose Ellen Kemp at Stone's Barn in Cumbria. Well, if you love what we do, we'd be delighted if you became a patron of Folk on Foot. It's a great way to delve deeper into our world. If you become a hero, you'll pay £10 a month and you'll get access to our extraordinary archive of songs filmed on our travels across the UK. So all you would have to do is go to patreon.com/folkonfoot and sign up there, and every penny you give will go back into making more episodes of Folk on Foot. So you get more if you give more. We really hope you will be able to support us, and we really hope that you will spread the word and tell everybody how much you enjoy Folk on Foot.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.